Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we have the Micah Mowry, a wonderful, wonderful friend of mine, and he's going to be talking about past relationships, what he's learned from them, and most importantly, his first time experience on MDMA. Such a great story, and such a great recording location that you will find out throughout the recording. Anyways, frickin' enjoy, friends.
Excuse me, Micah, what did you just say just now?
I think what I had just said was one of the big realizations for this year is that I don't have an accurate self-image.
And how did you come to that realization?
It's kind of like it's like someone who denies that it's snowing when there's like a foot of snow on the roof. There's like too much evidence for me to continue believing otherwise. I think I have a good understanding of what my traits are, or like some of my strengths and some of my weaknesses, but I feel like I'm blind to a full, like more of them than I actually do know. I think I'm blind to. Yeah. And I don't, the way people talk about me, or they talk to me, or the reactions that people have, positively and negatively, for lots of different reasons, have made me realize that I am not the person that I think I am.
Wow.
I guess is a good way of putting it. Yeah. And I don't know, it's caused me a little bit of confusion, because who do they perceive me as, and who am I being? Like, it's like you were saying about the shadow. Like, I don't know all the pieces of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
And so, with this, and something that you also said before that is that you view yourself as, like, a lazy asshole.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And, like, this is, guys,
yeah,
this is
definitely
Micah Mowry, just
no, it's very
an
true.
Incredible man.
No.
Incredible from how long I've known Micah. An incredible, like, just lover.
Incredible lover.
Just pause
there.
Incredible lover. Podcast over. Of food. Of nature, the culinary arts, like farming, of relationships, of friendships, of creating warm spaces for people to come and join together and experience nature. Like, literally trying to bring back things that we have lost.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff to bring back, right? I mean, case in point. I think that's very nice of you to say. I think that some of those things are very true. Some of them are very, very, very true. That doesn't speak to a work ethic, you know?
Ooh.
That doesn't speak to what am I accomplishing? Mm-hmm. Really, it's like, what do you try and accomplish first? It's easy when you have a framework to work within, but when you don't have a framework, when you have to think for yourself, which is kind of what I'm doing now in this realization, is like, okay, if I'm not the person that I thought I was, or at least I'm not the person that I thought people perceived me to be, which kind of means I'm not the person that I thought I was, who am I, and what am I trying to accomplish?
Mm.
And have I made progress towards that? And how do I continue to? Because that's what matters. I mean, I know that I want to be working towards that. And so how do I get there?
What does accomplishment look like to you?
Accomplishment. What is accomplishment? The word? Or my personal accomplishment?
Yeah, like, of course there's never going to be a day where it's like, yay, I'm done.
No,
that's it.
No,
but I guess purpose is a word that I come back to a lot.
Oh, purpose. I have a lot of purposes. But, you know, what is an overarching purpose? I think it's bringing people together. Mm-hmm. I think I see a lot of magic when that happens. And I think that's almost a cop-out purpose, because I think that's a lot of people's purposes.
Yeah.
Or purpose. I think that that's, it's more like the human condition than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Bring people together, spend time with people, you know, help to enrich the conversations that are had, hopefully. I think, you know, purpose that I have is to, you know, have a beautiful family and to provide the sort of life for them that I think is important in order to grow up in a healthy way, and like somehow balance that against reality. And, I mean, I think my purpose is to, I mean, really, is to just live my truth, and I think that my truth is something that can't be spoken. It's too primal for that. But I mean, it's about being me. What are the things that I want to do that I care about, and not like in a selfish way, but like really, like we are all. I think that we're all. I was listening to Joe Rogan on this podcast, and he said something I've heard echoed before by others, which is like, we are all members of this crazy organism called humanity. And like, I believe that. Like, we are all members of this organism called humanity. And so, how do I listen to the things that make me different, or not necessarily even different from other people, but make me especially me? And how do I be honest about that and do that thing and follow that?
Mm. Damn. See, that's a tall order to fill there.
Yeah. Yeah, so success is hard to find in a landscape like that.
Yeah.
So,
when have you, like, would you say you're the happiest you've ever been right now?
Happiest I've ever been. Yeah, definitely. Of course. Yeah, I think.
And why do you feel that way?
Why do I feel that way? Because I'm done doing all the things that I was doing before, and I'm open to being able to do what's next. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not for any real reason other than now is what we've got, and like I'm ready. I don't know. I don't want to be dealing with the problems and small forms of success I used to be dealing with. I want to be dealing with the big problems and the big forms of success that I care about now.
Nice.
So. Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't want to be worrying about the person who's sitting next to me in fifth grade. People want to go back to that childhood. Like,
yeah, they do.
There's beautiful things, I understand, but I think we carry our anxieties with us and our stresses with us the same, no matter what the day is. And at least the tapestries that make up my day, the colors that I'm painting with today are there's more of them than I had when I was 9.
That's for sure. So. Absolutely, for sure. When was the first time you heard the words self-love?
The words self-love, when did I hear it? Honestly, probably early. Probably early in my life. My mom is a pretty big, you know, yogi, hippie sort of person. She's like very much a high-powered businesswoman, but simultaneously does like Reiki and whatnot. And I mean, I'm sure self-healing was definitely a term. Self-healing was definitely a term that I was aware of as a concept. Self-love, it probably didn't make it into my vocabulary until I was like 21.
Okay.
22. So I probably encountered the books when I was like 8, stumbling around in the house. But But yeah, I would say 21, 22 is when I started to actually think about it, self-love. And I don't think I actually started practicing any sort of conscious self-love until a few years ago.
And what did that look like once you start practicing?
I think that self-love for me is closely tied to following your heart and like intuitive behavior. When did that start? I mean, it started when I started saying no. That was kind of I think that's probably what I did first. That was the first steps of my self-love, was just saying no to things that I didn't want to do, or to people that I didn't want to deal with in that moment, or whatever. It was like, I mean, you were talking about people pleasing.
Yep.
And, you know, I think I'm a recovering people pleaser is a good form, a good concept. I think there's lots of people in my life who would disagree with that, but they weren't the person I was trying to please. So,
ooh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think people pleaser is something I'm definitely recovering from. And I think, so for me, saying no, being able to say, just to have that thought process of, do I want to do this?
Yeah.
Which wasn't a process I ever went through. I remember talking about relationships and realizing that, you know, for better or worse, like, there are great relationships I've had. I've loved many people. But, like, this idea of being the person who didn't call the girl back or didn't want to go on the second date. I have basically never done that until my very recent adult life.
Wow.
The past few years, couple years, I mean, very, very recently, have I been able to even say or conceptualize the idea of, like, not, like, going, if I went out on a date with a girl, I would go out on a second date with them just because. Not, it wouldn't even cross my mind of, like, am I into this girl? Is this girl crazy? It would just be like, okay, I'm dating this girl now. Like, I have to go out on a date with her.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, the first date, it's like excitement. The second date, it's, if it's good, it's excitement. But even if it's not, I'll still go hang out with them and meet up with them. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would end up in these relationships literally by default because I didn't, it was the thing to do. It was what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be the nice guy.
Uh-huh.
And so I was the nice guy. And that works until it doesn't, until at some point there's a breaking point and you say, I don't want to be in this fucking relationship anymore. And then you have to get out of it. And from my younger years, I was so immature that I would just self-destruct the relationship. You know, I would just pull away, not talk to them, whatever, you know, super stupid stuff. And only very recently have I been able to own up and say, I'm not into you, you know, like, and understand that I can do that and not be a bad person. Even if that person says I'm a bad person and tells their friends I'm an asshole and broke their heart and treated them like this. And, like, it's my truth. My truth is that I can't be with you. So I can't be with you. And it took me fucking forever to understand that shit. And I think that that echoes through the rest of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. But why once you started to recognize that it's like, oh, I need to, like, like this person, like, to keep going, like, was there a specific...
When did I realize?
Yeah.
Oh, that was at the end of a relationship that I realized it. And it honestly wasn't... Maybe it was her that I did that with, maybe it wasn't, but it was just this realization that... I was with a person that I didn't, that I wasn't attracted to, and that I didn't want to be with, and I didn't care about, and not to say I didn't care about, I did immensely, but I didn't care to be with them.
Yeah.
And you know, a friend came to me and said, "Hey, you're not yourself." A very close friend, very close friend, one of my best friends, and I had to listen to them and think about it and have this conversation. And I remember I was like thinking about this all night, and I had gone to a park and was like thinking about this. And I got home, and this woman was immediately, she knew, she's very good at telling my moods. She knew something was up. She said, "What's up?" And I was like, "We got to break up."
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, I think that was a real turning point. There were many turning points before that, but that was like, that was a real turning point.
Yeah. Do you feel like you were just like, from then on, you wanted to live more like honest?
I think even before then, I wanted to live honest. I think that period was me trying to live honestly and running up against a wall and not even knowing that I was running up against a wall and saying, "What is this wall? What is this thing? The dishonesty." Like, I couldn't see the dishonesty in myself. And I had to hit my head against it enough times before I saw it was there. And I think honesty, I don't know, I think that's something I've always really strived to do, is to live honestly. Mm-hmm. The thing was, I was also trying to please people. And so I was both of these things. Mm-hmm. I was both very honest and people-pleasing. And one of my definitive skills is being diplomatic. And it worked really negatively when those two collided. Because in my diplomacy, I was honest about caring for people.
Yes, right.
And yet, it didn't mean the things that they felt like it meant.
Yes.
And so, which is dishonesty. Mm. Which is absolutely dishonesty. It's as dishonest as anything else. But that's why I couldn't see it. Because I was being honest, but it wasn't actually honesty.
Yeah. Do you remember, so like your emotions, very conflicted, but like, do you remember how your like body felt throughout this?
My body?
Yeah.
I mean, I was going through certainly a severe illness at the time.
Well, tell me about
that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's when I was sick, man. That was, that a lot of that time was when I was really sick. Long story short, I contracted, some sort of infectious disease via food or water or, you know, something. I was traveling all over the place and I had contracted this thing. And this is a illness which remains fairly mysterious to me, and which partway through it I realized had a significant mental component. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was like, it's really hard for me to pull it all apart and say, okay, did I get physically ill first and then my emotional and mental well-being got kind of pulled into that and became wrapped in it? Or was I mentally and emotionally sick first and then that manifested these physical things? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think honestly it's dependent. It's not, neither one is true anymore. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah.
Doctors found this wrong, but, and they give me this drug and it's solved, but like, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? The point was it was a transformative time for me from a bodily perspective as well as this kind of emotional thing.
Yeah. Isn't that, it's really interesting you mentioned the like caring for someone so much, but knowing that you can't. You with them.
Caring for someone, yeah.
How come you think people, because you've probably seen other friends in situations where they're in that spot where they care for someone so much, but you think they're not meant to be.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And why do people get blinded to that?
Why do they get blinded? I mean, we're animals, man. I think it's our design. Our design is to be blinded. Blinded in the beginning and given sight in the end. You know, I think I mean, the goal of our bodies is to make babies. And they try really hard. Our bodies try really fucking hard. And sometimes our minds overrule it, and sometimes they don't. But, like, I think that's for me, is what it's about. It's about, and not just biology, but, like, all of these other aspects of how you find a mate in our modern world. Of, you know, it's the biological attraction, and it's the expectations of your family, and it's the societal pressures, and it's the what's, I don't know, what you're supposed to be attracted to. And I think people end up in relationships for all sorts of reasons, and it's hard to recognize in the moment that the reason you ended up in a relationship might not be because you fell in love with the person of your dreams. Uh-huh. It's, like, really hard to accept. And I think all of our, while there is this not biological component, I think our biological component is fighting against all of those emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it takes some distance to even be able to recognize that stuff. Mm. And I don't know how it is for women, but I think for men, that's definitely what I've seen and experienced.
Man, that's a whole, we could keep going down that. Micah, tell me, first of all.
Tell me, Seth.
Even though this isn't the first of all, quick intermission. Where are we right now?
Oh, yeah. What's up, guys? We're in this little place called The Collective. It's Seattle, Washington. It's just about the sweetest little urban base camp club that you could ever wish for, right in South Lake Union. And inside of it, they have a two-story hammock. And at this moment, I'm in the hammock on a bed of pillows. Yeah. Where are you, Seth?
I'm also in the hammock.
Yeah.
We're recording in a giant hammock.
Yeah, I think this might be a podcast first.
This is a podcast first. You heard it first, guys.
You had it first. You heard it first,
almost,
right here.
We almost recorded in the side rock climbing room.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw a small symphony performance not 45 minutes ago. And the beanbags look like rocks, which are really cool. And there's hanging basket chairs over there.
You see the little fireplace they got?
And there's a little fireplace. It's kind of supposed to recreate like a little fire pit.
What do they call it? The fire pit or something
that
like that?
It's called a fire circle, fire pit.
Fire circle, something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But this place is really cool. And it's fun to hang out here and why not record a podcast.
I'm glad you like it. It's a great spot. This is... And I did a couple meals here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool little thing.
And
they got going.
Every time I walk into it, I laugh.
Yeah.
You know I laugh a little bit because I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
It's a sexy space.
It's so sexy.
It's a brand new big building.
Oh, Micah, tell me
about...
They
got $3 draft beers?
That's cheap. That's a deal.
Nuts.
That's a little deal.
That's nuts.
That's a little deal.
Yeah. Who loves
the
deal?
Who doesn't love a deal?
Who loves the deal?
Who loves the deal?
I love a deal.
Deal. Tell me about your time on MDMA.
Oh, my time on MDMA. Well, you'll have to ask more specific questions.
Well,
you got to lead me on here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a big conversation.
What? What were some of your first moments that you started to feel it?
So let me bring myself back to that time. So it's been a little while.
It's been about a year.
Year?
I think it's been a year.
Pretty much exactly
Well, maybe a year and like 2 months. I feel like it was like October.
Yeah, I think because Sheba and I were seeing each other.
Yeah.
So that was October. Yeah, so 6 months. How long have she and I been together? A year? 18 months. It's been about 18 months ago.
It's been about 18 months ago.
18 months, yeah. So, MDMA. Well, we were walking.
Mm-hmm.
We were walking towards Gasworks. I don't know if you recall.
I do recall
that. Yeah, so we were...
Of course.
We were walking towards Gasworks from my house. I think we got to the bottom of the hill.
Oh, the dinosaur. Remember the dinosaur?
Oh, yeah, I remember the dinosaur. Plant. Yeah, that was pretty cool. So we got to the bottom of the hill from my place. And that was, so it's like 3 minutes away from my apartment. We walked down the hill. And Seth gives me the MDMA. I pop it in my mouth.
You find the MDMA on the ground.
Yeah.
And take it. I provide nothing.
Sorry. Seth found the MDMA on the ground. And then I took it from him and beat him up. And then I took it. He protested. And then, anyway, so then I took it. And then we were walking around. And we were just talking casually for a while. And for me, I'm really trying to remember back now, but it was like this fuzzy sort of feeling at first. And then I remember just kind of like a slight, I remember feeling like I was detached from my body a little bit, like almost like I was floating, like my motion of walking was just like way easier, you know, like walking. I remember that was like my first thing that I realized is that walking took zero effort. It was effortless. And I just seemed to be kind of gliding towards wherever I was looking. And wherever I would look, like, that's where we seemed to go. And I remember seeing the flames.
Yeah, we came upon...
I remember seeing the flames.
We came upon
through the trees and the buildings in the distance. I remember seeing it and saying, what is that?
Yeah.
And we looked at it, and we couldn't figure it out, and so we walked towards it, and walking towards it brought us into Gasworks Park.
Yeah.
And we walked into Gasworks, and by now I'm, like, really starting to feel whatever I was feeling. And, I mean, warmth, comfort, trust, relaxation. I had very, very, I don't remember any fear. I don't remember any fear that night. But still early into the experience. So anyway, we come across the flames.
The flames and the drum circle.
The flames, the guy was...
Was it before?
He was spinning.
Oh, the spinning, and they were doing a photograph.
That's right, yeah. They were... This person had, like... I don't know what you call that shit.
I mean, it was like a flow toy, pretty much.
They were spinning torches on ropes.
Yeah.
Like six fire spinners. Yeah, they were fire spinners. And this person was doing, like, time-lapse photography of them.
Long exposure,
thank you. And anyway, so I just remember just being, like, overjoyed by that experience of, like, of not just that it was happening, but that I had stumbled upon it in that moment, and I just felt so lucky and appreciative. And I just wanted to know, like, why they would be doing this and what had inspired it and whatever. And it was, like, a school project or something. Who knows what it was. But anyway, then we continued walking and found the drum circle.
Like, you can't plan that.
No. That was when I was definitely, like, at the peak of my experience. And, I mean, it was a very viscerally intense moment for me. I was almost overwhelmed by it. Mm. I mean, I think the perceptiveness, there's like a perceptiveness that accompanies MDMA, you know, like a intuitive energy or something like that, where, like, you maybe pick up on other people's energy a little bit better. And so I think just all of those people intense and focused and banging on things, and there was another fire there, I think. And so I think
there was.
It was a very intense experience. It was positive. I just couldn't bring my... It was so intense that I couldn't pick up a drum. Like, I wanted to pick up an instrument and be a part of it, and I just... It just seemed so crazy to me. Anyway.
Wow. And then, like, as we were, like, talking as well, like, how did... Do you feel like your thoughts changed a little bit on, like, conversation?
Yeah, so after the drum circle is when I really felt, like... I started to embrace and, like, fall into the experience more, and that's when our conversation kind of struck up again, because we had been at this drum circle, and so we peeled off and kind of continued walking. And I think from then on, I mean, one thing that I really enjoyed was just your direction, you know, like these, you had some pretty well-aimed questions. But I think for me, it was really focused on appreciating people. And I think that that's the thing that I really took away from that experience in general is this appreciation, not just for you, but like for everyone we were encountering, and that brotherhood experience. You know, you really felt that. And then, I mean, my favorite thing was when we went to that was my absolute favorite part of the night, was going to whatever that beer hall was.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think that was Fremont Brewery.
Fremont Brewery. That's what it was. Yeah. And they were closing.
Yes.
We couldn't even get a beer.
Yep.
And we just walked in the front door. Yeah. And we sat up on the bleachers. And we were just sitting there watching people say goodnight, because it was the end of the night and everyone was leaving.
Yeah.
And I just remember watching everyone hug. That's what I remember. I remember just everyone was leaving. So they're saying goodnight to their friends and their loved ones and their parents and whoever. And you could see the difference between people who were hugging because they were needed to hug and people who were hugging because they loved each other. You know, like, not like boyfriend, girlfriend, I love you, but like, you're my brother and I care about you, or you're my sister and I care about you, or you're my best friend and I care about you. Like, these caring hugs. And it's not like in the movies where the hug lasts a minute and people are crying. Not like that. Like, it's just a hug. But for me, it felt like that. It felt like the movie. It was like, it was just this contact. It was this way of, I don't know, the way people communicate. I think that was really a magical moment for me. It's just watching people communicate who cared about each other. I don't know, I've witnessed it a million billion times, but like, have I ever really witnessed it that way? I don't think so. I think I really learned a lot about other people. And I went into it expecting more to learn about myself. But I mean, learning about other people is learning about yourself. So, yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. I'm so glad. I didn't realize that the Fremont Brewery, like, experience was that impactful.
Yeah, that was the most impactful of the night, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you remember another large part of this night?
Oh, Lucas.
Yeah, dude. What? Tell us about Lucas. What?
Lucas.
Well, holy shit.
I forgot about it. Lucas, we met. Where did we meet him?
We met him at Gasworks Park.
He was sitting on the bench next to us.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. He was sitting on the bench next to us at Gasworks, and he's a very young, like, innocent-looking kid, and, you know, like, 18, you know, he looks like a young kid, and somehow we got struck up in conversation. He was, like, very much a well-experienced person with, like, MDMA, which blew my mind, and so he was along for the ride, and he's stuck around the whole time.
Yeah, he's hung out the whole time.
And anyway, we reconnected, and he came to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And he's working on a book he sent me. I mean, we've met up a dozen times, for sure.
So great.
Yeah, he moved, by the way.
Where did he move to?
He moved back home, somewhere in the Midwest.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it's a bummer not for him. He's happy, but it's a bummer for us.
That's bizarre. That's crazy.
But
move back. And it's
you should
great.
Read some of his book, though.
Oh, I am so down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lucas, I can't wait to read if you're listening.
Lucas Spencer.
Shout out. And it's great because I think we were playing music, too, like out of a speaker.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's right. And you were setting the tone.
And it's just how... Was I even talking about at the time when we talked to Lucas of just like, here's the thing, you can just talk to anyone.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure.
And then immediately we just have a night long friend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he just like folded right in.
Yeah.
It was like, peanut butter and jelly and bread on either side. And like, I don't know who's the bread and who's the peanut butter and jelly, but like, that's what we were.
We were delicious.
We were all of those things. Yeah.
And we ended up going to the restaurant, I think, near the end of the night too.
Restaurant.
Got some food.
Oh, I have a brief memory of that.
Yeah, I think that's at the point where you were starting to cool off.
Yeah. Was that before or after the brewery?
I think that was after.
Yeah, I think maybe I was just getting tired or something at
that
point.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't really recall that.
I don't remember
like what we ate or anything.
Yeah, me neither.
Drink.
I think you had one glass of wine.
Yeah.
Maybe after something like that.
Yeah, maybe. How bizarre.
And so kind of how's that experience kind of left you, and also anything else to add to that?
So I mean, I think what that was kind of like a first step for intentional exploration of aspects of myself that I hadn't seen before.
Mm.
Interestingly. I think that that's what that was. And so really this is a part of this whole realization that I don't know myself as well as I thought. And again, that sounds like a bad thing in a way, but it's not. It's, I know myself better now. And I know that I don't know everything. Nor can I even know everything, nor does it even matter. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily have that realization. And so, I think for me, it's been like a really, like a steady stone to stand on and look out on, like, what is next? Like, what are the intentional choices I'm going to make about my life? And, I mean, I think that's what it was about. It was positive reinforcement that, that this is a good path.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are definitely aspects of it which are just about the interpersonal stuff. I mean, I think I'm a pretty appreciative person. Like, I'm a person who can be caught unexpectedly by something that I find beautiful and kind of cry in a day. Like, that can happen to me. But I think that the experience that I had on MDMA was, it almost like gave me perspective on what those emotions were, like what they felt like or what they meant. It's kind of like seeing the green paint and helping you realize that green is actually color, not just like the color that green things are. You know, like if you'd never seen green anywhere except plants and you saw green paint, you'd be like, oh, it's a color. It's not just like this thing that all the plants are. Like it exists without that. And I think for me that was like a big realization, is that all of these emotions exist and I can interact with them. And I don't know if that made any sense whatsoever.
That made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I think it will connect with a lot of people out there.
There you go. Synesthesia.
Ooh.
Boom.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. What else?
And an overall connection to self.
Definitely. Self-love all the way. connection to self for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of being connected to myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that... I think that impacted my immediate ability to connect with myself. It gave me the food that I needed to build those neurons or whatever that allowed me to really think about these things more. I mean, it's a horizon-expanding experience. And so because of that, you have new words and new vocabulary, right? Like, it's the concept that your language limits your perception right? And my language was expanded, and therefore my perception was expanded. And yeah. So that's what I would say about it.
It's funny because you can do all the description you want, which, by the way, you're like so amazingly descriptive, and it's like painting. I mean, I know you literally just talk about paint, but it's paint this beautiful.
Yeah, it's a green
image,
picture.
You know,
this beautiful green picture.
Trust me, it's green.
Yeah, listen, it better be.
But like, could you imagine like someone telling you this, or like you even telling yourself what that experience is like, and then experiencing it and be like, oh yeah, I knew exactly. That's right. It was exactly like that.
No, definitely not. No, I'm just talking out of my ass. So, yeah, I think there's no words. I mean, words are just, they don't, you can't explain a meal with words. How are you going to explain, you know, a mind-altering experience? It's what are words?
What are words,
man?
What are those goofballs?
Yeah.
Micah, is there anything else that you think you found that not everyone knows about self-love that you want to tell them?
Love. I mean, a side of self-love that I don't think is talked about enough is discipline. I think that self-love is a lot of times about all the things we associate with love. And love is not often associated with, determination, or I guess love is definitely associated with determination, but it's not so much associated with pain and suffering. And you know, something that I've thought about a lot lately is like when you strengthen yourself, right? And you mentioned the farming background and the food background, and you know, for plants, you watch a plant grow, and like, if you have a vining plant, that plant will never grow up unless there's something for it to grow up. And like, it can't achieve what it's designed to do unless the obstacle is in its place, unless it meets that obstacle. And then it will go to town, and it will vine, and it'll grow, and it'll be amazing. And so I just think about this idea of like, self-love doesn't mean being easy on yourself. It means taking care of yourself and being holistic about that. And I think that discipline is a big part of that. I think disciplining yourself and your mind is a big part of self-love. And that's the part that I'm working on right now.
Wow. Best of luck on that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
That's a really good thing to distinguish.
Yeah,
because you say there's someone that actually is lazy.
Yeah,
and they're like, just it's self-love. I'm going easy
on
myself.
Hey man, listen, yeah, I'm just taking it easy tonight. Yeah,
it's like, well, but like, you're not gonna be taking care of yourself. Like, this is gonna end up hurting you.
Yeah,
whatever this is.
Yeah, exactly.
That you're doing.
Oh, and I heard a quote associated with this, and it was, I think I said on the phone to you the other day.
Yes. Yeah.
It was, I think it was discipline he was defining. Maybe it was perseverance. Anyway, essentially it's, discipline is doing something that you despise every single day. And it's something that you hate, something that hurts you. You know, it's like this idea of that mental strength that like you don't want to go out and, you know, run 10 miles, but you're going to do it. And what is that relationship? That's such a, that moment in the mind is a really crucial moment when your disciplined mind overpowers the mind that wants to stay inside and not go run 10 miles. I mean, the silence is intentional after that. What is that moment? I don't know. What's going on there?
I'll let you find out.
But you can't even get to that point unless you have a disciplined mind. And it doesn't start with running 10 miles. It starts with making your bed. That's what I've heard.
Oh.
That's what I heard.
That's the JP you want, right? Or something like that.
I mean, everybody says that.
Starts with making your bed. And you know what? You know what I did today?
What'd you do?
I made my bed.
Oh!
Boom!
There it is. Hell yeah, man.
Totally did it.
You know why they say that?
Why?
The Navy SEALs, anyway, say that so that when you have a super shitty day and everything fucking falls apart and everything fails and no matter what, you can't succeed, at least when you get home, you come home to a bed that's been made for you.
Thanks, past self.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks so much for being on this fucking podcast. You're the best, and I love you.
I love you.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have just this little thing going on.
Yeah.
And it's just really, it's really beautiful. It's going well. It's going well. Oh, guys, if you ever see Micah, give him a little kiss for me if I'm not there, because I want to kiss him.
Give me kisses.
Kiss, kiss.
Love you guys.
Love and. Well, there you go, friends. Another first-time, first-hand experience with MDMA and seeing what it's like to be facilitated in an experience for myself. Just to clarify, I do not provide MDMA. Thank you very much. But anyways, so I hope that you've gained a lot from hearing these stories. I hope that it's inspiring, especially the relationship stuff. I always love hearing about that. So hit me up on loveamp.com if you want any one-on-one consultation on self-love or just any more information. And love yourselves out there, guys.
This was Love Amped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.